This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This is The Writer's Voice, new fiction from The New Yorker. I'm Deborah Treisman, fiction editor at The New Yorker. On this episode of The Writer's Voice, we'll hear Suvankam Dhamavangsa read her story Bozo from the April 8, 2024 issue of the magazine. Dhamavangsa has published 4 volumes of poetry and the story collection How to Pronounce Knife, which won the Giller Prize in 2020. Now here's Suvankam Dhamavangsa.
Bozo. The man stood in front of an arrangement of bottles and glasses. He knew what everything in those bottles tasted like, and what to pair them with. He was a bartender. He could make a drink for you, if you wanted. All you had to do was lean over and ask. I wanted something he could make, something no one else had. I asked him if he could make this for me, and he nodded. I saw him pause and think. What he had in mind seemed to require him to go and look for things. He rummaged through a plastic bag and plucked something out. When he brought the drink to me, it looked like water. In the middle of the drink was a mint leaf in the shape of a heart. The leaf floated there, and then it didn't anymore. I didn't know how to talk to him. He was right in front of me, making drinks that other people in the room had asked for. So I just watched him work. That was all he was doing, working. He was someone who could carry 4 glasses using the space his palms and fingers could provide. He did this repeatedly. He never fumbled or broke anything. He cut up oranges and limes and lemons. He scooped ice, decorated drinks with straws. He seemed to know what people in the room wanted before they wanted it. From a small machine next to him, orders spooled like ribbons. He didn't try to talk to anyone, didn't walk over and ask anything, didn't seem curious about anything. A waitress went by, and though there was plenty of room behind him, she squeezed so close that her chest brushed up against him. And on the way back, when she passed him, she touched his arm. He didn't react either time. Part of the job, no turning around to acknowledge her with a smile, no asking about her shift and how it was going. But she got to touch. She got to be back there with him. If I looked at him, he'd look over and smile. If I leaned forward a bit, he'd come to me. It was so easy to get him to pay attention. I wanted to invite him to my place, to ask when his shift was over. But he probably got questions like that every night. Was he a person who went with anyone who asked, or was he more discerning? And what then if he came to my place? A few pumps and it would be over. I didn't want a few pumps. I wanted to be something to him, something that would last more than one night. I don't know why I wanted that, but there it was, that want. If we'd been online, I could have looked at a still picture. I could have clicked on a heart to let him know I was interested. I could even have sent a message and been direct. And if he didn't reply, I could have moved on to the next face. After all, there were hundreds of messages to respond to, and that was just in 24 hours. Stacks of faces and bodies offering themselves up. Who knew if any of them were who they said they were? Whether their good looks were a result of well-placed lighting, a flattering angle, an old picture. Were those faces even theirs? And how would I know if what they said about themselves was true? I could only take their word for it. Out in the wild like this, what I saw was true. I could see him in any light and at any angle. It was possible to know him. But really, I didn't want to know him. I liked him at exactly this distance. They all disappoint eventually when you get to know them. I just wanted to look and make up stories. I loved that I knew where he was every evening, that I didn't have to wait for a call or a text. If I wanted to see him, I could, and I knew exactly where to go. For 6 months, I returned once a week, on Tuesday or Thursday nights. It wasn't so busy, and I could lean over and ask him to make me something. Sometimes I let 2 or 3 weeks go by without returning. I didn't want to seem too available. I am a busy girl, after all. And I wanted him to wonder where I was or who I was with. I thought, a gorgeous man like that probably gets someone anytime he wants. He just leans over, and women know what he wants. He has probably never spent much time alone or known what being lonely feels like. He's probably never had to long for anything. Strangely, he seemed shy, though I don't think that people really are shy. It's just a way of getting you to do all the work. He wiped the bar top with a cloth. He was probably someone who knew how to clean at home. Maybe he wouldn't have to be told to do the dishes. He'd keep the glassware spotless. It would gleam behind the doors of the cupboards, and he might even know how to cook. Working in a place like this, he'd see people coming out of the washroom, wiping their wet palms on their pants, sneezing into the food, or just breathing heavily onto everything. He probably doesn't want to eat out. He was so hard to talk to. He said so few words. But one night, he was chatty and spoke to me because I seemed familiar to him. He knew I had been there before. He told me his name. He said he'd grown up in a small town. So maybe the shyness was real. His days off were Monday and Wednesday. I asked him about his summer plans. He told me he was sticking around. He said he used to take off to Hawaii for the beaches. I told him that I was going to travel there and mentioned what I did for work. I wasn't used to saying what I did I said. I know that sounds fake, but that's really what I do. He laughed and mentioned that he used to model. That sounded fake, too, but looking at his face and his body, considering how comfortable he was with being looked at, and the way he let me look at him without it ever having to mean anything, I could tell that he knew how to make his living from someone's gaze. I wondered how old he was. My guess was maybe early 30s, and I asked him. I was close. He was 38. I didn't see a ring on his finger. Was he incapable of commitment? Didn't want to commit ever? Or was it something he wanted, but it had never worked out? I liked that he was almost 40. It meant that I wouldn't have to teach him anything or help him become anything. It meant that he wasn't like other men, getting married and starting a family in their 20s, with a house by the time they're 30. What after that? An affair to keep it going, or a divorce for giggles? And being polite, he never asked me how old I was. I was a few years older than him, but I didn't look it. Every time I went back to the restaurant, I sat at the bar and watched him work. He never yelled at anyone, and no one spoke unkindly to him. He had a quiet confidence. I was jealous of every drink I saw him make. Those drinks were going to other people's mouths, and I wanted to drink them all before he took them to the tables. When he wasn't making drinks, he served food to all of us, sitting at the bar. Nothing special. Pale, soggy sticks of potato, things fried in lard, clumps of meat. That made me feel a terrible sadness for him. He just wanted to go to the beach once a year. I wanted to give that to him. Actually, I wanted to make it so that he'd never have to come back and serve anyone here again. I don't know why, but I wanted to give him everything. Where had these feelings come from? And why were they here now? I had them, and I couldn't tell him. I could want so much, based on so little. It was smaller than that, even. It was nothing. A few weeks before, I had been to the aquarium. There really is a place called the Abyss, I learned. It's 3 levels below where sunlight reaches. I don't know how to swim. I would never go diving or snorkeling. You swim toward things and they dart away. You don't get to see anything, really. I like how safe it feels at the aquarium. I can breathe on my own and look. I don't have to know how to swim or be afraid of drowning. I thought of a school of fish I saw there that swam together as one giant ball, spinning and spinning. A lobster with 3 claws, the giant octopus and its 3 hearts, jellyfish that glowed. I wanted to go there with him and watch him look at those things, see him in the dark, see if he could be beautiful there too. It probably seemed like a strange thing to ask someone I'd just met. I leaned over, almost tried, lost my nerve. He took my leftovers and put them in small containers. There were round paper containers with plastic tops that kept liquids from spilling out. Brown paper boxes for the things that didn't have liquid. He placed them all inside a paper bag and rolled down the top as if it were a gift to me. I looked at what he did for others sitting at the bar who had leftovers. He brought over the same brown paper boxes and plopped them down in front of them. They all had to pack up their own leftovers. He didn't consider whether they might need a round container with a plastic top for any liquids. I wasn't like the others, I thought. Special, I thought. I returned a few days later and thought that I would try again. Ask him to go to the aquarium with me. He came over as before and smiled. I said it. He said he didn't hear me and turned his left ear to me. I tried again. It felt as if I had to say so many words and a year had passed by the time I finished saying them. I was nervous and scared, and I let it show on my face. He paused for a moment and said, "I don't think it's a good idea." I nodded and let him see my disappointment. He added, "I have a girlfriend." I thought of the words, "with my girlfriend," which he could have used at any time. An omission like that didn't feel like an accident. Maybe he did it just for tips, to sell a hope to someone. It seemed, if he had a girlfriend, unkind, even cruel. But I hadn't asked, had I? Instead, I'd asked his age, what he did on his days off. Maybe when you have someone, you see the two of you as one, and so when you say I, you mean both of you. I asked, "How long have you been together?" And he told me, 3 years. I thought, 3 years is pretty serious, and it should be worth at least a mention. "I really appreciate it, though," he said, like someone used to being given things when he had so many already. He walked away to let me have a moment to myself. I didn't want to slink off. I was hungry, and I wanted to eat, to stuff something into my mouth. An old man sitting next to me at the bar looked at me and said, "I knew he had a girlfriend." He offered more, saying, "I'm from New York. A couple of weeks ago, he took his girlfriend there and he asked me for places to go." I thought of New York then. I had visited the place many times. I thought of the way people cross the street. That's what came to mind. The people there don't wait for cars to stop for them. They cross when they want. I thought, too, how lovely it is that they really do trust the one-way signs. They look one way and then start to cross. They actually seem to think that no one will come the other way. The two of them had gone there together and crossed the street like that. I thought, what happened 3 years ago? The world had shut down, the pandemic. People had paired up quickly. Survival can feel a lot like love, the way you are forced to need each other. Maybe that was what it was for him. A coming together that was a convenience. And after 2 years, being that close, even if you didn't love someone, you would then, because the circumstances encouraged it. I thought of the woman, his girlfriend, who she was. Whoever she was probably like me. She probably wanted him to stop bartending and wanted him to have his beach vacations. It's hard to leave a woman. Women are, for the most part, good people. Nice. And if they're not nice, people make them feel bad about it, so they have no choice but to learn how to be nice, attentive and caring, thoughtful. They take out the garbage, clean the toilets, have dinner on the table, buy you clothes. They're ambitious for you, and they forgive anything because they allow you your mistakes. You don't even have to try very hard. Just look clean and pretty. I wondered if he was unhappy. Being unhappy is comfortable. No one is going to come for your unhappiness. And really, you don't have to do anything about it if you don't want to. Why give that up? It was his job to be nice to me, to serve me. And I was mistaken. I thought it was interest. She comes in on Friday nights, the old man said, offering another detail. Sits right here. I thought about that, and I wanted to see for myself. When I returned to the restaurant the following Friday, I knew that the woman at the bar was her, his girlfriend. The woman was, as I wanted her to be for him, beautiful. I watched her and I listened. She kept calling him something. I tried to make out what it was. Bozo, she said. I've heard babes, sweetheart, darling, honey. But bozo, I'd never heard before. I knew then that he really did love her. To be a bozo to someone meant that you let them call you anything and you would be that for them. He wanted to be a bozo. Then, alone, I got up and left the restaurant. I walked down a dark alley nearby, and there, with my back up against a brick wall, I closed my eyes. I said the thing she'd called him to no one in particular. I wanted what was in her mouth to be in mine, too.
That was Suvankam Damavangsa reading her story, Bozo. This is her third story in The New Yorker. You can hear more New Yorker fiction read by the authors on NewYorker.com and on the New Yorker apps available from the App Store or from Google Play. On the New Yorker Fiction Podcast, we invite writers to choose stories from the magazine's archives to read and discuss. This month, David Bismoskis reads Likes by Sarah Swanyan Bynum. You can subscribe to that and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app. Tell us what you thought of this podcast by rating and reviewing The Writer's Voice in Apple Podcasts. This episode of The Writer's Voice was produced by Michelle O'Brien. I'm Deborah Treisman. Thanks for listening.
I'm David Remnick, host of The New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.